Today we are going to discuss from chapter 18, verse number 18 onwards. And if we go back to verse number 5, there Krishna explained that we must never give up three important actions in our life. Whatever other things we want to give up, it's fine, but these three types of action must never be given up. And that the three actions are yajna, dana, tapaha. Why particularly these three actions? Because yajna, which is the pancha maha yajnas, that covers all our duties and responsibilities to Ishvara, to our family, to to our gurus, to our ancestors. So that call comes under yajna. That is something we must never give up our duty and service to. Then dhanam is our duty to society, right? To help by giving charity, feeding the birds, the cows, etc., contributing to the environment, keep the environment clean, etc. All that falls under dana. And tapaha, austerities, are the duties we owe to ourselves in order to bring some discipline to our senses, to our mind, through controlling any addictions we have. So it not necessarily means just fasting. But whatever you are addicted to, you at least keep one day of the week aside and you try to discipline yourself away from that thing. So if you are addicted to coffee or addicted to sugar or to desserts or whatever it is, you just control your senses for that thing, master your senses. Thus, these three actions must be done. But then Krishna said, sannyas itself, to give up, falls under three categories. There is tamasic sannyas, rajasic sannyas, and sattvic sannyas. Tamasic sannyas in verse 7 he said is, if people give up these duties, yajna, dana, tapa, give up all their duties and obligations, because they wrongly understand, they think by giving up they are attaining salvation, they are attaining renunciation. He says that type of giving up is a tamasic way of looking at things. It is totally wrong way of giving things up. And he did mention in verse 5 why we should perform yajna, dana, tapa. What was the reason? What is the reason that we should perform yajna, dana, tapa? For purification of ourselves, our mind, our body, our senses, our intellect. Therefore, when our equipment is not purified, how can we progress on the spiritual path? Thus, tamasic way of looking at things is a very lopsided way of looking, thinking I just give up and I'm okay, I am a sannyasi. That is tamasic renunciation. Rajasic renunciation is giving up any of these duties, yajna, dana, tapa, because they bring a lot of pain, it causes you a lot of discomfort. You find it very difficult, it causes you bodily discomfort, mental discomfort, so you just give this up. That is called rajasic renunciation, verse number 8. And verse number 9 he says, sattvic renunciation. So very clearly note, renunciation is not giving up the action, but doing the action. What must you give up? The doership, the attitude, the attachment to the fruit of the action. Thus, we must be very careful that renunciation is not giving up the action, it's giving up the attitude of attachment in your action. That alone is called sattvic renunciation. And since it is not possible for us to give up all actions, minimum at least he says, do yajna, dana, tapa. And how do we do yajna, dana, tapa? In verse 15, he says, whatever action a person performs, you need to use your body, mind, speech. That means if we want to perform sattvic renunciation, we have to use these three equipments. We have to do our actions with the right attitude. Thus, we come to the important part of this chapter when he defines. Now, in last week we spoke about verse 18, that when we want to use this body, this mind, this speech, what is it that is motivating this body, mind and speech to function in the right way? Why does one person do the right action and one person does the wrong action? There Krishna spoke to us about the six topics, six components. And what are the six components? Jnanam, karma, karta, buddhi, dhriti and sukham. So these are the six components that drive our actions, that drive our knowledge and drive our actions. And all the three gunas will influence this. It will influence what type of knowledge we seek, what type of action we do, what type of intellect we have. All the gunas are responsible for this. So if we want to follow sattvic type of renunciation, we should follow the sattvic aspect and avoid the rajasic and tamasic aspect. And last week we discussed that there are two aspects to our action. One is knowledge and one is the action itself. So if our knowledge is defective, what happens to our thoughts and desires? Also defective. If our thoughts and desires are defective, what happens to the actions? They also become defective. Thus, it is very important that we be guided by the right knowledge, so our thoughts and desires are correct and our actions become correct. So here now, in verse number 18 here, Krishna uses some technical terms here. Okay? Technical terms to describe basically what are the what we call knowledge and what is action also. So now if you look at it, knowledge has got, for knowledge we need three things. In order to attain any knowledge we need three things. What are the three things? If you look at verse number 18, there is in the first line, jnanam, jnayam, parijnata. Three things are required. So what is parijnata? Parijnata is the knower. There must be a subject. I, the subject, want to know something. So parijnata refers to me, the subject, the knower. Okay? And for me to know parijnata, I must therefore have jnanam. What type of knowledge? So what is the knowledge that will I need in order to reach my goal? So parijnata is the knower. Jnanam is the knowledge I need to acquire to reach my goal. And jnayam is the goal which I want to reach. So you see three things. I want to know about history. So what type of book should I buy? Geography books. History books, right? So I, the parijnata, jnanam is the history book. And what is the jnayam? I will get knowledge about history. So there are three components there. So he says these three. And for the action, to do any action, any activity that we want to undertake, okay? So what is jnanam now? Jnanam is knowledge which I require, okay? Now it also includes whatever text I have to read, Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, etc. So jnanam falls under all that. What is the books I have to read? And it also includes what are the instruments I need to use. I have to use my ears, I have to use my eyes. So all that falls under jnanam. Jnayam is the object or the goal of knowledge. What do I want to attain? I want to attain moksha. That jnayam is my object of knowledge, the goal of knowledge. And Parijnata is me, the knower. So Krishna says, Jnanam, Neyam, Parijnata, Trivida Karma Chodana. Trivida means threefold. These three, Jnanam, Neyam, Parijnata, are the threefold what? Karma Chodana. Karma is action. Chodana means inducement to action. These three factors will drive the knower, the knowledge and the goal. Okay? So these three, knower, knowledge and the object or goal of knowledge, are the three so-called motivators to knowledge. Okay? Inducements. Okay? And on the third line he says, Karanam. Okay, again you see the third line, Karanam, Karma, Karta. There are three. So what is Karanam? Karanam are the instruments that I use to do my actions. That means my hands, my legs, etc. Karanam are the instruments I need to use. Mind, intellect, etc. Then there is Karma. What is Karma? Karma is the actual action that I have to do. Thus, if I want to come to Gita class, I have to use my hands, my legs, my eyes to drive myself to Gita class, right? And what is the action? Action is driving, then I have to sit down, I have to listen, etc. And thirdly, what you need? Thirdly, what must be there for any action to take place? You, the doer, there must be you, the person must be there. So Karta is the subject. What is the nature of the subject? So we must also understand the nature or the quality of the person, that is the Karta. Karanam is the instrument the Karta uses. And Karma is the actual action performed. So these three, Krishna says, in the fourth line, Trivida Karma Sangraha. Trivida means these three are not the causes, because the cause was earlier given, right, in the first line. These three are the accessories for doing karma. You need these three in order to perform any actions. Okay? So is it very clear? For knowledge, you need, that drives our knowledge, there are three components. The knower, the equipment used to acquire knowledge, it can be scriptural books, it can be your ears, etc. And the goal of your knowledge. And to do the action, you need the doer, you need to perform the action, and you need certain instruments to do the action. So, if for example, knowledge is there, but you don't, the doer or instrument is not there, then also action cannot be performed. So you need both together. Okay? Now, from these six varieties that Krishna has given, he will select some of them. We will see why only some of them. And he will divide these six components into sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Okay? From verse number 19 onwards. So what are the components now? He divides it into three categories now. He condenses the six topics into three. Earlier verse 18 he gave six topics. Now verse 19 he will condense it into three categories. What are the three categories? If you look again at the first line of verse 19, the three categories are Jnanam, Karma, Karta. Okay? Now, Jnanam is what we said earlier, is the instruments, the instrument of knowledge. What you need to gain the knowledge, okay? Like the scriptures, as I said, you need to listen with your ears, you have to see with your eyes. So that is Jnanam, okay? That reveals the knowledge, okay? So under Jnanam, you can also take Neyam together, because Neyam is the goal of your knowledge. So you see how from six topics, it can be condensed into three. So under Jnanam, which is the instrument used to acquire knowledge, you can also include Neyam, which is the objective of the knowledge. Why do I study history book? Because I want to get knowledge of history. Why do I come to Bhagavad Gita class? Because I want to get knowledge of the truth of spirituality or whatever. Okay. Second topic is karma, the action. The action that I need to perform. And in this category, you can add in karanam, which is the instruments of action. So together with the action, karma, you can also add in the topic of karanam, which is the instruments needed to perform the action. And finally, the third category is karta, the doer. Okay? In this category of karta, you can also add in parijnata, who is the knower. Because the knower and the doer is one and the same. I, the knower, become I, the doer also. So under karta comes parijnata. Thus now from six topics we have condensed to three topics. Jnanam, which includes Neyam, Karma, which includes Karanam, and Karta, which includes Parijnata. Okay? Now what does Krishna say about these three now? He says in the second line, Tridhe Eva Guna Vedata. Tridhe means threefold. Okay? Threefold. Guna Vedata. These three, Jnana, Karma, Karta, are differentiated, Vedata, by what? By the Gunas. It is the Gunas that cause the difference in these three things. What type of person you are, what type of knowledge you seek, what are the instruments you use to do your actions, can be differentiated by the three Gunas. Okay? Prokchate, this is stated as Trividam Guna Vedata. Okay? And he says that this knowledge is not something new. It's not something new. Why? He says, Guna Samkhyane. In the third line, you see the word Guna Samkhyane. Samkhya, sam means full. When you add the prefix sam to another word, it means full, means in intensity, okay? Kya means has been taught. So this topic of gunas that influence our knowledge, that influence our desires, that influence our action, has been fully taught where? In the Samkhya philosophy. If we go back to there is a philosophy which is called Samkhya philosophy, which is, if you know that in our Sanatana Dharma, there are six different philosophies. There's Vedanta, there's Samkhya, and so forth and so forth. Samkhya philosophy, there is a whole text written on it, which explains about all these various components of the body and how they are used, etc., how the gunas affect it. It is written by Sage Kapila. Okay? Sage Kapila, and there's a whole book on that called Samkhya philosophy. And part of Samkhya philosophy is used by Vedanta also to explain about all this body, knowledge, karma, action and all that. Okay? So Krishna says it is not nothing new, it has been taught before and he is merely extracting that knowledge also from there. So that's why now Krishna says Shrunu. Shrunu means listen, because there is something very important. These gunas are affecting us. Every action, every thought, every knowledge we acquire is all driven by the gunas. So if I want to know in which direction I should go, I should know how to analyze myself and know how the gunas are affecting me. So this is very important knowledge. That's why Krishna says Shrunu. Another reason why he is saying Shrunu, listen, because why? Arjuna, 17 chapters you've been listening now. So much of knowledge you've taken in your mind now. Now comes the final important part. So you better pay attention, you know. Okay. So, listen about this, okay, as they are in keeping with the scriptural teachings. Okay. So now let us see how he divides these three topics up, okay, from verses 20 onwards. So first thing he wants to talk about is knowledge. Okay? What is sattvic knowledge? He wants to talk about knowledge now, jnanam. And we must understand that we need to pursue both. We need to have material knowledge and we also need spiritual knowledge. Okay? But we must understand the difference between material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. Material knowledge will help us to find a living in this world. There is no doubt that you need material knowledge because the scriptures give us four goals: dharma, kama, artha, moksha. These are the four goals that every human being must work towards. Material knowledge will help you to fulfill which two goals? Kama and artha. So you can fulfill your karma and artha through material knowledge. But can you fulfill the goal of dharma and moksha through material knowledge? No. So you need spiritual knowledge to help you fulfill the other two goals. That's why people say, isn't material knowledge enough? Yes, it's enough, but it's only good for karma and artha. What about the other two goals? I need dharma and moksha in my life. So in order to reach that goal, I also need spiritual knowledge. Thus, with both of these, I am able to accomplish all the four goals of my life very easily. Okay? So, now, the thing is, we come to knowledge now. Here we are talking about spiritual knowledge now. Because Bhagavad Gita is about spiritual knowledge. Okay? Spiritual knowledge is what? Atma Jnana. Knowledge of your true self, your true nature. Who are you? Okay? And this spiritual knowledge can be divided into three types: sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. So what are the differences in the three types of knowledge? He will discuss in verse 20, 21 and 22. Now there is one group of people who are not exposed to any spiritual knowledge. They have no belief in the words of the scriptures. So what do they accept? They only accept one reality. This body is real. This mind is real. This intellect is real. I am real. As far as this, anything else is concerned, I do not know. This is what I consider as myself, as my reality. They don't believe in the existence of Atma, or that there is Atma before the body came into existence. Now Atma is there in my body. When I die, the Atma will continue to exist. They don't believe at all in anything. This, in verse number 22, Krishna will say, is called Tamasic Jnana. So that is roughly the definition of Tamasic Jnana. People who don't believe in the existence of Atma, they only believe that this body is real and there is nothing besides that. Then we have another group of people who believe in Atma. They say, yes, there is an Atma. This Atma gives life to my body. And they also believe that upon death, this Atma will leave my body, it will travel to another loka, or it will travel to another body, and everybody has got a different Atma. This is the belief of one type of people. Okay? There is a traveling Atma and there are multiple Atmas. Everybody has got his own Atma. Okay? And everybody's Atma has got a Punyam and a Papam also. Okay? So they believe that the traveling Atma is separate from the body. When the body falls, this Atma will travel. And if I have done good deeds, it will travel to the higher lokas. If I have done bad deeds, it will go to the lower lokas. This, Krishna says in verse 21, is called rajasic knowledge. This knowledge, but it is of the rajasic type, to believe in a traveling Atma. That means they don't believe in the all-pervading Atma. They believe there are many, many, many Atmas. Not one Atma, but there are many, many Atmas. Now come to the third group. The third group, they claim that other than the body, there is a traveling jiva. There is a jiva that needs to travel. What is this traveling jiva? This traveling jiva is the subtle body, the causal body, together with the reflected consciousness it travels. You remember last week I drew the chart here. Okay, so that subtle body, the causal body, and the reflected consciousness is the traveling jiva. Okay, but besides this traveling jiva, these people accept that there is one more higher consciousness which does not travel, which is all pervading, which is eternal. So this is called sattvic knowledge. That means I believe that there is a traveling jiva that carries the punyam and papam, but higher than this there is known as the atma, which does not travel, which is all pervading consciousness. This is called the sattvic knowledge. Okay, so now in verse number 20, Krishna will explain about sattvic jnanam, sattvic knowledge. He says, yena, yena means that through which ikshate, ikshate means one who sees. But here he is not talking about physically seeing. What do you mean by seeing? Because you can't physically see the Atma. So understand by through your higher intellect, the one who understands, the one who discriminates, who has gone through this spiritual knowledge and who understands what? Sarva Bhuteshu. Sarva means all. Bhuteshu means beings. Okay? These beings are constituted of causal, subtle, and gross bodies. So this person understands that there is a gross, there is a subtle, there is a causal body. Okay? Through his understanding, okay? Which are subject to birth and death, which are subject to arrival and departure. They are all the creation, sarva bhuteshu, if you look at the third line, vibhakteshu. Vibhakteshu means they are all distinct. Whatever I see in creation are all different forms, colors, sizes, shapes. Everybody has got different desires, they do different action. So there is diversity. Okay? So this person, he has got a discerning intellect. He realizes that what he sees in creation is diverse. There is variety, there is diversity in creation. But bhavam, he also realizes that behind this diversity there is bhavam. He sees this bhavam. What is bhavam? Bhavam here indicates the all-pervading eternal consciousness. He also sees this. Sees again meaning not physically seeing but intellectually understanding. That behind this whole diversity in this creation, I see the diversity, but I realize that behind this, there is bhavam, this self-effulgent consciousness, bliss, which is called Atman. And what type of Atman is this? Ekam. See what? Ekam. Where is that word Ekam? You see the first line. The first line, sarva bhuteshu yenai ekam. Okay, the word ekam is there in the first line. Meaning, they see the Atman as only one. There is only one Atman. You don't have a different Atman, I don't have a different Atman. There is only one all-pervading consciousness. There are no multiple Atmas. Bodies are multiple, creation is variety, but Atman is only one. And what else they realize about this Atman? Not only that it is one, but it is avyayam. Second line, the word avyayam. Avyayam means this Atma is immutable. It is not subject to birth, decay and death. The creation goes through birth, decay and death. But behind this there is that one Atma that exists yesterday, today and tomorrow. Okay. And what else? So three things. They realize Atman is Ekam. There is only one. It is Avyayam. It is immutable. Number three, it is Avibhaktam. It is undivided. Right? It is undivided. Even though it exists in every creation, you cannot cut Atman into different pieces. What kind of example can you use to understand this? Adi Shankaracharya always uses the beautiful, simple example of pot space. Pots are different sizes, shapes and colors, but the space inside the pot is the same as the space outside the pot. The pot does not divide and cut space up. You cannot cut and divide space. In the same way, that person understands that Atman is not divided. There is only one Atman there. Okay? It cannot be divided. And Krishna says, this knowledge, Vidhi, know, Sat, know that, when a person has reached this kind of, has this kind of inner vision, when he can see that single Atman in the diversity of creation, Krishna says, Vidhi Tat, know that, Sattvic Jnanam. This is what is called as Sattvic Jnanam. To see that one divinity, that one reality behind the diversity. Okay, Sattvic Jnanam. Therefore, what is Rajasic Jnanam? Verse number 21. So again, that word in the first line, the word two is very important. The word two means but. To differentiate that the Rajasic Jnanam is totally different from Sattvic Jnanam. It's a different type of Jnanam. And what is that Rajasic Jnanam? With this group of people believe that apart from the body, there is an Atma that travels to other physical bodies. They believe in the existence of many, many, many souls. That's why we do ceremonies. You notice that this great Swamiji who pass away, they don't do any ceremonies for them. But we mortals, because we believe that there is a traveling Atma that's got punyam and papam, better we do some prayers to help that fellow on the way. But to the great souls who have realized that actually there's no traveling Atman, there is only that one all-pervading consciousness, there is no reason for them to perform any more rituals and ceremonies already. Okay? So, these people who believe in the existence of many souls, they believe that souls carry the punyam papam, that all these ceremonies must be performed for the departing soul. So, Krishna says, Yat Jnanam, that type of knowledge, Veti means by which a person sees, again sees here means not physically see, but who wrongly understands, okay, who wrongly understands what? Sarva Bhuteshu, all the variety or diversity in this creation, Sarva Bhuteshu, Prithakvena means of different shapes, sizes, colors, etc. What do they see? They see that everything in creation is Prathak Vidhan. Prathak Vidhan means there is difference in everything in creation. They see that people behave differently, different desires, different actions. They see that diversity. Okay? But they also see that, therefore, by seeing differences, they also see that there is a different Atman in everybody. So, Prithak Vidhan means everything in creation has got its own Atma. It's different. The body is different. Your body is different than mine. Your Atma is different than mine. So, there is differences not only in the body, but also in the mind, also in the intellect, also in the Atman also they see a difference. Okay? Krishna says that type of knowledge, Tat Jnanam, is Rajasic knowledge. To see different Atmas in different people and not realize that actually there's only one single Atman. They don't recognize the existence of that single Atman. So for those people also, therefore, there are what we call the Puranas. They speak about all the various rituals to do. You have the Vishnu Purana, the Garuda Purana, all these are appropriate for people who believe in the existence of many, many, many atmas. But Krishna says, this is also knowledge, but it is one step lower than sattvic knowledge. He calls it rajasic knowledge. Now we come to verse 22. What is tamasic knowledge? Again, the word two is used to indicate now that is a third type of knowledge, a different type of knowledge, which is different from sattvic and rajasic knowledge. And the one who is endowed with tamasic knowledge, he or she has no faith, no belief in the words of the scriptures, does not believe in papam and punyam, does not believe in the existence of atman. They say everything is settled here. Whatever we do, we either enjoy or we suffer here. Beyond that, there is nothing. Okay, when I die, the body dies, the soul dies, the consciousness, everything dies together. There is no more rebirth and all that. Okay? So, what does he say about such kind of knowledge who believe that the body is everything? He says, yat, one whose belief is saktam. Saktam means is confined to. Very tamasic people have a very strong, conviction that their knowledge is the right knowledge, that you are all totally wrong. So there is a conviction, but this conviction, unfortunately, he uses the word, if you see in the second line, ahetukam. Ahetukam means there is no logical reasoning. Where does this person get this knowledge that there is no such thing as Atman? There is no logical reasoning, there is no justification. So ahetukam means which is devoid of any justification, which is devoid of any proper inquiry. How have you arrived at this kind of conclusion? It's just my belief in life, you know. They say there is no God, there is no scripture, there is no Atman, there is no afterlife, everything is begins and ends here itself. Okay? And if you tell them that science also says that body is made of five elements. Five elements are matter, ether, air, fire, water, and all that. And matter has got no life. And if you ask them, therefore, how can this body come to life? They have no logical explanation. Okay? So what do they see? They see that ekasmin kare, there is only one cause for this whole creation. The whole creation has come from the five elements, okay? And these five elements go through different changes, and at the end, all the five elements are destroyed. Beyond that, there is nothing already. So there is only one cause for everybody's creation. You are created the same way, I am created the same way, we all come from that same five elements and we go off in the same way. Beyond that, there is nothing at all, okay? So, this type of knowledge where the person does not follow any reasoning, no logic, no thinking, and just follows his own ideas about life, who doesn't accept about Atman, about Punyam, Papam, etc., and says, beside this body there is nothing, besides this life there is nothing, such kind of knowledge is called tamasic knowledge. You see, scientific knowledge accepts that matter is inert. But they say besides matter, there is something that which is called, it is Big Bang theory, that has brought a kind of fusion, like a fusion chain of reaction that has created life. But the question is always asked, in order to create so much of diversity, so much of colors, and everything that behaves in a different way, the fish, the insect, there must be an intelligent creator. You know, it's not just like if you take chemicals and just put there just as an explosion, but nothing happens after that. It is not that from that explosion suddenly a fish comes out, an insect comes out, a human being comes out. So, science does not accept that there is an intelligent creator, that just by a fusion of dust particles or atoms and all this, the whole creation came about. So what do we call this kind of, there is some logical reasoning behind that. So maybe we cannot say it is tamasic, we can say it is rajasic at the most, we can say. Because they accept that there is matter, there is consciousness, but beyond that they don't accept anything else. Okay. So if you read the Big Bang Theory, it basically says that at some point in time, some particles came together, there was a great fusion, and suddenly the whole creation came about. But we, from a religious viewpoint, say there has got to be an intelligent creator who put everything into the right order. Why are there four seasons? Why do they trees give fruits in certain season? Why is there law of gravity? Where did the law of gravity come from? So we believe that there is an intelligent creator.
Without scriptural knowledge,
right,
we don't go into science. And then how is this coming from us? Without our scriptural knowledge,
right, we don't.
We are mere worshippers of so-called gods.
Right.
So we stick to that level.
Right.
It is still tamasic from us.
If you don't believe in Atman, it's tamasic. If you believe
it. At that stage, you were just in the temple that you were just praying and.
Mechanically.
No.
Reason for what you're praying for.
And self-knowledge.
Right. Yeah, it's true. That's why a lot of us are doing things mechanically because we follow what our parents have just told us and we just do it. We have some faith that there is a God. Right. But beyond that, we don't understand. What is this God? Where is this God? To us, the God exists in the temple. The God exists in my home at the altar. But beyond that, I cannot realize that this God is all-pervading. Okay? So again, it's all due to our own ignorance. Right? And again, I keep on saying that, unfortunately, we don't get access to knowledge in the temples.
Yeah.
Where the temple should become a center of learning to teach us something. First about rituals, about worshipping God, and then they should take us to the next level to explain to us about what is this God, who is this God and all that. But that part is not happening. Right? So, you know, hopefully now with all this Chinmaya mission, Ramakrishna mission, Gita Ashram, etc., Sai Baba mission, they are spreading this knowledge slowly.
Can I just add one thing? There's also this problem between Vedanta and
Vedanta and Saivism.
Because you know when we teach this Bhagavad Gita, it's like some people look at it as Vedanta and they don't say Saivism. When we say Siva is ultimate, it's nothing beyond Siva. So it's also possible to talk. When we start disseminating knowledge, we get into this kind of problem. But since we are divided
up, we say that
is more basic.
But the thing is Vedanta accepts all the divinities
as
equal. That they say, if you say that energy, consciousness, you can call it Shiva, you can call it Krishna, you can call it Devi, you can call it whatever you want. But when we look at Saivism or what is the other one, Vaishnavism and all that, then they are very staunch in that. No, there's nothing else, this is it, you know. And I've had many arguments with people about this. When they come to Bhagavad Gita classes, they say, oh, that means I must only worship Krishna, I cannot worship Shiva. Say, no, worship whoever you want. Because here he's not talking about form, he's talking about beyond form. Right? The form is only for you to worship, you choose any form you want. But ultimately come to the formless. Right? So there's something that we have to understand.
Yeah.
We cannot be very staunch, then we don't want to move from there, it's very difficult. Okay. So, what else he says about this tamasic knowledge? He uses the word, if you look at the third line, athatvarthavat. Athatvarthavat means they are not concerned about the truth. They are not concerned of any logical explanation, to go through the scriptures, to try to understand something. And what are the saints and sages? There are so many saints and sages, they all must be fools to go around talking about, you know, about soul, about Atman, about Brahman, then what about all these people who have sacrificed their lives? Adi Shankaracharya, Ramakrishna Paramahansa, all these great saints and sages, they have been talking that there is only one universal truth. But these people do not want to even accept that truth. Okay? They don't want to accept that. And Alpam, they call this knowledge as Alpam, means it is trivial, it is of no significance at all. Why should I waste my time on this knowledge? You know, what will be the benefit if I know this knowledge? So they consider this knowledge as trivial, of no importance, of no use at all. So what can you do for such people? Pray for them, that's all you can do. So, tat udaritam, such kind of knowledge, udaritam, is said to be tamasic. So now he has divided the three types of knowledge. Okay. Now in the next verses, he will take up the next topic of karma or action, and divide this again into three sections: sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. So now, first of all, in verse number 23, what is sattvic action? Again, all of us are doing action. It's not that rajasic and tamasic people also don't do their duties and responsibility, but again we have to look at the attitude. The attitude is very important. So we want to know whether we are doing sattvic or rajasic or tamasic action. So what is sattvic action? Yet that which action, yet which is niyatam. Now this word niyatam is very important for us to understand in verse number 23. What is niyatam? Niyatam is called obligatory action. Okay, obligatory. Well, what do you mean by obligatory action? What would you consider as obligatory action? Because all of us are different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then how do you define what is obligatory action? No, you should do it, but how do I know what is my obligatory action? Your
ashrama.
Yes, correct. So one is your ashrama, that means at the stage of life which you are. If you are a bachelor, your obligatory action is towards your studies. What you call brahmacharya. Conserve your energy, discipline your senses and mind, concentrate on acquiring knowledge. That is your obligatory duty. If you move to grihastha ashrama, then your obligatory duty changes again. It's to my spouse, it's to my children, it's to my in-laws, etc. So as we go along the different stages of life, our duties also will keep on changing. And we must therefore not give up this, but take up all our obligatory duties. Secondly, duties change according to place. For example, in your house, you have different obligatory duties. When you go to your workplace, then that becomes your obligatory duty. Or suppose you serve as a chairman of your a spiritual organization, that also becomes your obligatory duties. Or maybe you are a treasurer in your resident association, that also is an obligatory duty. So you see, duties change according to time and according to place. Whatever you find your duties according to your time and place, you do that. And everybody has got different, because we all have different levels of ashrama. We are always at different. For example, what is your duty when you come here? To listen and study the text. So your obligatory duty changes again. You go home, you have a family, you need to cook the food, etc. Again, your duties change. So generally, niyatam karma, obligatory duties, fall under two categories. One is called nitya karma. That is your everyday duties. As a father, as a mother, as a worker, this is your everyday duties. You have to do them. You cannot avoid them. Nitya karma. Daily obligatory duties, according to time and place, you must do your duties. Second is called naimittika karma. N-A-I-M-I-T-T-I-K-A. Naimittika means occasional duties. So at the birth of a child, there are certain prayers you do. What you call, when there is a when our ancestors, there are certain rituals that you do. That does not happen every day, but it happens at specific periods of time. So those are called Naimittika karmas. Okay? So all fall under Nitya, fall under what? Niyatam karma, obligatory duties that cannot be avoided. Okay. Rajasic and Tamasic people also do that. It is not that they don't take care of their family, they go to work, everything they do. But here's the difference. What's the difference? First difference is Sangha Rahitam. There are two words in the first line. Sangha Rahitam. Rahitam means devoid of. Devoid of what? Sangha, attachment. That is our biggest problem. Sangha Rahitam. Duty, obligatory duty which is done devoid of attachment. So what do you mean by devoid of attachment? No sense of doership or enjoyership. These are the two things. What is doership? I am doing this, I only did this, I only took care of my family, I only did this seva, I did this dana. The sense of I, and I, that has got to be taken out. That sense of I-ness has got to be taken out. So the sense of doership. Whatever needs, see, duty means what? It has to be done. You're not doing anybody a favor. That is your God-given duty, given to you from the birth to death. That is duty for you to do. You should not think that I am doing it. If I have a lot of money, I am in the capacity to give charity. It is because why? I have been blessed with as an instrument to give money. So I consider myself as an ATM machine. People come punch the button. You know, ATM machine has got no ego, right? You punch the button, how much money you want, he just throws the money to you. I am an ATM machine. I am serving. What am I serving? I am serving the creation of the Lord. I am serving the Lord. I am serving His creation. If I have knowledge, I share it. If I have money, I share it. If I have good health and time, I do seva. I share that. So whatever I have been blessed with, I am sharing. That's all. So never consider I am the doer. Second, enjoyership. Because once there is doership, along with that automatically comes, I must get something back from this. You know, people must come and thank me. My children, when they were small, I sacrificed my whole health, I looked after them, and they are big, now they must look after me. Does it happen? Hardly, right? Sometimes it happens, right? But when there is that expectation, and suddenly the child packs up everything and moves to America, and does not call you for 6 months, now what is going to happen? Then you say, no, why, you know, why he went away, why he's not looking after me, now I'm old and all that. Why do we have that expectation? Why did you look after your child? It's a duty. You have to do it. That's it. This is your duty. You discharge your duty accordingly. That's it. You should not think beyond that. Yes, if the child considers it his or her duty to look after the parent, that is of the good karma of the child. That is what the child should realize. But we should not feel disappointed or dejected. Right? So,
is there punyam for this duty, obligatory duty?
Very good question. Is there punyam for obligatory duty?
You do without expectation.
If there is punyam, what happens?
Then you go to
Loka and come back again. So any duty done with expectation, there is punyam. There is punyam. But because of the punyam, you go to that ayaloka and you come back again. But duty done without attachment, there is no punyam, there is no papa. So there is then ultimate moksha. So that's why the key word here is sangha rahitam, must be done without sense of doership and sense of enjoyership. And this is our problem, because whatever we do, we play two roles in all our actions. We are a karta and we are a bhokta. I always consider myself a karta and I always consider myself as a bhokta. Karta means I am the doer. Bhokta means I should get the results of my action. Because I did this, so I should get something back in return. But when we give up this doership and enjoyership, there is no more standpoint of what we call attachment to that. No sense of ego. Okay.
But what happens if it's not near them? Example? Seva, for
example. Seva is obligatory. No? It falls under yajna dana tapa.
I mean, when you are a parent, you have to take care of.
Okay, okay.
What happens?
So you have no time to go and do seva, you see. Is that what you are saying?
Yeah.
That you are a parent, your children,
you are involved in your
family. So that becomes a seva to the Lord. Looking after your family, if with that attitude is there, I am serving the Lord by taking care of my family without any expectations, without any attachment.
Early in life, you are forever looking busy, money, you have kids, first you think like
See, the realization is there earlier and you look after your family with that sense of detachment, that becomes a seva. But if you don't have that knowledge, then you go about doing everything with a sense of attachment, then that will fall under the rajasic.
But it is attachment, isn't it? Because you're doing it because your children grow.
Correct.
I mean, we shouldn't even have that attachment.
But are you expecting something back from them? You do the action you are doing because it is your duty. But are you expecting something back from that?
Actually, only on hindsight when you are old, you are asking yourself, is that expectation?
So the expectation should be removed out. That expectation comes because of the attachment. Once that expectation is out, the attachment is out, then you are doing... See, we keep in mind always that we are doing for the Lord. We are not doing for ourselves. Problem is every time we think we are doing for ourselves. When we keep on thinking, I am doing this for you, Lord, then there is no more sense of attachment. Any action, whatever we are doing, just keep the Lord in mind. I am doing for you. If I am cooking the food, it's for the Lord. If I am going seva, it's for the Lord. Always we keep our mind fixed on the Lord. Then their sense of attachment, ego, everything goes away. When I bring that I into the equation, then all my troubles start from there.
Sure. See, basically, all actions are obligatory actions. Basically, what are non-obligatory actions? The actions we are talking now is obligatory to parents, to the priest.
Any action that is based on your life, I mean on your age and your place, you have to do it, is obligatory.
So what is non-obligatory? Basically, everything you've spoken is obligatory.
What is they were non-obligatory?
No, it's obligatory. Yakya dana tapa. It falls under dana. That's obligatory. He says, kaharyam eva tat, must be done. So means what? Obligatory actions. Seva is obligatory. Dhanam is obligatory. Duty to parents is obligatory. All that falls under. You donate your kidney, fine, but are you expecting something back in return?
That's not obligatory.
No, it is a form of saving a life.
It's a
yeah, you're saving a life, isn't it?
A very high seva.
Oh, yes, it's not easy, yes. But it is a form of seva also. Because we must not think seva is only I going and doing some work. Seva can come in many different ways. Yes, you're right. Donating your organ is also a form of seva. Donating your eyes or whatever is a form of seva also. It's a very great sacrifice. Not many people can do it.
But after that,
you
write
Buddha and Sankhya. Yeah, of course. You don't want to give up your eyes for your baby.
No, you don't pay the organs as a car, right?
Yeah. See, when you are signing the organ donor card, that intention to give, that means part of your body away, is itself already a great deal already. Right? When you're signing that organ donor card on your free will, your attitude is because I want somebody to benefit from my death. That is already a seva already. Right? But no expectation that Lord, then you give me Brahma Loka and all that because I'm giving away my body part. That must not be there. Okay, so what else he says about sattvic action? If you look at the third line, a phala prekshuna karma. So phala means fruit or result. Aphala means devoid of selfish rewards. Aphala. Any action which an individual performs devoid of selfish expectations. Right? So again, as I say, we look at the broader picture. It is my duty to the Lord. I am serving the Lord, I am serving His creation. This body is an instrument given to me to serve His creation. As long as that attitude is there, that becomes sattvic karma. And what is my intention of doing sattvic karma? Only for one, that is for inner purification. That should be my only thought. I am doing this only for inner purification. To prepare my mind, to prepare my body to purify. Okay? So the motivating factor is not selfish returns or selfish rewards. Another quality of sattvic action, second line, a raga dvesha. So you know raga dvesha, likes and dislikes. A raga dvesha, devoid of likes and dislikes. A raga dvesha kritam, done without and devoid of. Raga is what? Devoid of pleasure, gain, success. I shall gain so much name and fame. People will come and praise me if I do this. That is raga. Dvesha, I consider this a very painful action, troublesome action, grumbling while doing that. You're doing your duty, but all the way grumbling. That is not sattvic action. That is not sattvic karma.
But I mean, you don't grumble, but you don't enjoy that.
It's the same thing. Mentally, you don't enjoy that. Mentally, you're grumbling.
At least initially, you can't really.
Yeah, it's not easy. I know people, the Sai Center, who can volunteer to leprosy colony. Yeah, it's not easy. Yeah, and some of them told me in the beginning it's very difficult, but now they are already used to it. So they don't find any hesitation and all that in doing the work. Right? Yes, in the beginning, yes, it takes. It's not easy. Yeah, go to old folks' home, go to leprosy colony. But if you keep on going, slowly your attitude changes, then that's a wonderful thing. So, a raga dvesha, not doing action out of hate, out of irritation, out of so much of complaining, grumbling and all that. And also not doing action to try to cause harm or hurt to somebody. That also is a raga dvesha also. So one is grumbling attitude, one is doing some action that causes hurt or pain to somebody also. So devoid of that, a raga dvesha kritam, doing action that does not hurt people, that you don't grumble. And again, yes, it's not easy. In the initial part, you may do it. But if you have this knowledge, you are able to check yourself at least. At least if the grumbling starts, you are able to check, hey, this is not right. Correct? Because you have that knowledge. But if you don't have the knowledge, you will be doing all that but grumbling all the way, right? So knowledge does play its role. Only thing, when does it dawn in you? The more you study the knowledge, the more firm it is in you, the more faster you will check yourself. A wrong thought comes in, you check yourself quickly. And then you improve from that. So knowledge has its benefits also. So whether the action is going to bring you pain or pleasure, loss or gain, all that is not considered at all. And in fact, many people don't understand that the purpose of marriage is exactly this. Do you realize why? What is the real purpose of marriage? Huh? It's a system designed by our religion so that two strangers, two individuals come together and learn how to adjust to one another. That person has got their good points and their faults. I have got my good points and my faults. When we come together, there should be what? Adjustment, cooperation, understanding. And not only between the two individuals, husband and wife, but with also the extended families, the in-laws. So if you are able to do that, live in harmony and understand and give and take, you have already created an ashram-like atmosphere in your own family, in your own house. But if there is so much of argument, you can't take whatever the other person does, you turn your whole house into a hell. and how are you going to progress also spiritually. So marriage is also designed by our scriptures, by our saints, so that people come together and learn to adjust to their own individual differences and all that. And then only we can, what we call, adjust to people outside our home. Right? If we can't even adjust to people inside our home, how to even adjust to people outside our home? So that is also the one of the reasons for a marriage.
Yes, is that why brothers and scriptures call it marriage as a yagnyam?
Is it? They do, is it? They call it as a yagnyam. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. But it is a grihas ashrama. The word ashrama is applied to that. So grihas, the family life itself becomes an ashrama. It is converting your whole married life into an ashrama process. Okay. So tat sattvikam uchate, such kind of actions with all these qualities are known as, uchate means is said to be called, is said to be sattvika actions. So now we talk about what rajasic actions. What is rajasic action, which is totally opposite of sattvic actions. In sattvic karma, we must understand spiritual growth is primary, material growth is secondary. In rajasic karma, material growth is primary, spiritual growth is secondary. That is the main difference. So the motive of rajasic karma is not for spiritual growth, it is only for selfish material growth. So that's why the word here, used here, there's what we call, normally you'll find this word, nishkama karma, right? Nishkama karma, that means kama is desire, nishkama means, sakama is with desire, sakama karma, sorry, rajasic karma is sakama karma, is with desires, with selfish desires. Sattvika karma is nishkama karma, which is devoid of desires, right? That is the difference. So here, what does Krishna use the word? He says, yat karma, that action, the first definition of rajasic karma is, you see in the first line, kamepsuna. Kamepsuna is done solely for the purpose of some selfish benefit, some selfish desire. As long as there is some gain for me, there is some kind of pleasure for me, I will do it. So there are two words here, kamepsuna, there is the word kama, kama means desires, ipsu means obsess. You're obsessed with desires, therefore you only do any action which will satisfy your personal selfish desires. So kamepsuna means obsessed with selfish desires. So all these actions are driven by that. And Krishna says that is not the only thing. So the word punaha is used there. Punaha means also including, you know, apart from just having selfish desires, the second quality is sahamkarena. Sa ahamkarena. So ahamkar is ego. Sa ahamkarena means with ego. Endowed with self-esteem. Endowed with ego. Okay. Now, therefore, a sattvic person, when he does any action, he dedicates it to God, to the grace of the Lord. Right? With the grace of the Lord, with love for the Lord, the sattvic person does actions. But a rajasic person does action with what? With ego, with self-glorification, with vanity, with all the wrong attitudes, the person does the actions without acknowledging any grace of the Lord. So sattvic karmas, when you do sattvic karmas and you think of the Lord, you dedicate your actions to the Lord, you surrender to the Lord, it helps to flatten the ego, it reduces the ego. But rajasic karmas are done with ego, with glorification, with gratification. It only seeks to inflate the ego. The ego becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. So this sahamkarena, kamepsuna, And what else? Rajasic karma is bahula ayasam. Bahula ayasam means it's done with great strain, great worry. Why is there so much of strain and worry in rajasic karma? Because you're always expecting something, you know. That's why the English language is very beautiful. You know, they have this word past tense, present tense, future tense. All the time you're only tense only. Thinking about the past, thinking about the... Because there's always some expectation. Will I get? Will I not get? Will this person come and thank me? Will this person garland me? You know, all the expectations are there. So continuously while doing action, there is stress. That's why when earlier I've always told you all, when we divide sattvic, rajasic and tamasic, if you look at productivity and peace of mind. Sattvic person, productivity, yes. Peace of mind, yes. Rajasic, productivity,
yes.
Yes, productivity is there, rajasic. Peace of mind,
no.
Tamasic person, productivity,
no.
No. Peace of mind,
yes.
Yes. So, yes. Ignorance is bliss. You know, ignorance is bliss. Right. There is peace of mind, but there is no productivity. So from that we can understand roughly the karma, how it applies also. In terms of productivity, in terms of peace of mind, when there are so many selfish desires, so many selfish goals to accomplish. Some are attained, some are not attained. Some cause agitation. So there is constant stress also. And there is no surrender to the Lord. That means you feel everything you accomplish is only because of your own efforts. Such kind of action, Krishna says, tat rajasam udaridam, is said to be udaridam, said to be of rajasic nature. Now verse 25. What is tamasic action? So what is tamasic action? Tamasic action is based on four factors. Okay? And what are the four factors which will define it as tamasic action? Tamasic action is ya karma anaveksha. Anaveksha means without any consideration. Consideration of what? Four factors. What are the four factors? Aravyate is undertaken out of moha, delusion. Now, what is this delusion? Without clearly analyzing the situation. So you just do it. That is tamasic karma action, without analyzing what anubandham. The first thing is anubandham. You can see the first word there. Anubandham means what are the consequences to me? What are the consequences to my family? What are the consequences to society, to community? The tamasic person doesn't bother at all. So that's why you see like alcoholics or drug takers, they are not concerned what is going to happen to me, to my family. They can even rob and cheat from their family, spoil their family name, reputation, spoil their life, spoil other people's lives also. So anubandham means to those who are connected to you, you don't even consider their emotions, their feelings, what they are going through. You just do what you feel like doing. So that is one. Second is kshayam. Kshayam means loss. Loss in terms of what? Name, honor, reputation, financial loss, health. Health also you are not even concerned. So when you don't take in these basic considerations, you don't care what happens to your name, your honor, your reputation, your family's honor, your financial loss, your health, etc. And a very good example of tamasic action is we can see in Mahabharata. Duryodhan, driven to war, driven by what? His own greed. All he wanted was that power. That's all he wanted. He didn't care whether he destroyed his family, destroyed his friends, destroyed millions of lives just because of one thing, just because he wanted that kingdom, that Hastinapura. So that is totally tamasic driven action also. He drove thousands of people to battle, destroyed how many families? No. Then himsa. Himsa is a harm, causing harm or hurt. Either you physically abuse people or you verbally abuse people. So there is action that causes verbal or physical abuse, using harsh, insulting, sarcastic words. And you make others suffer. Humans, cruelty to animals, if you see the way they slaughter animals just because of their own, to satisfy the taste of their tongue, the amount of cruelty that is done. And recently there was a case also of the Singaporean who's been now charged for causing cruelty to a dog. I think he did something to the dog, right? So he's being charged. So all this is basically tamasic actions, which we will reap the karma of that at some point or the other. Fourth factor that doesn't take into consideration, paurusha. Paurusha means your abilities and capabilities. So we must also understand our limitations. And according to that, one example is people who live beyond their means. What is, you know, how do you define, I told you last time, how do you define a rich man and a poor man?
Rich man earns more than he can spend.
A rich man earns more than he can spend. What's a poor man? How do you define a rich man and a poor man?
State of mind.
Whose income exceeds desires. A poor man is one whose desires exceed income. So no matter how rich you are, as long as your desires drive you and exceed your income, you become a poor man also. So paurusham, living beyond your means, is one example. To impress society or to compete, to keep up with others, and these are the actions that eventually destroy you also, right? People, and you can see a lot of nowadays credit card defaults are going up and up and up. It's very scary actually what's happening. So that type of action, Krishna said, tat tamasam uchate, such a kind of action that does not take into consideration all these factors, harm to your family, harm to yourself, loss of reputation, loss of health, etc. Those you live beyond your abilities, all this is called as tamasic action. Now, from the next two verses, Krishna will explain about the three types of karta, the doer. So there's a sattvic, there is a rajasic, and there is a tamasic doer also. So verse 26 first. Four qualities of a sattvic karta given. The sattvic doer. What are the qualities of a sattvic karta? First quality, mukta sangaha. Sangha, as you know, is attachment. Mukta is one who is free from attachment, who has renounced his hankering for results. So again, the sattvic karta, the doer, is one who does the right action. That is the primary criteria. And what you call, whether the outcome of the action is favorable to me or not, that is not considered. What is duty is to be done, right? So that's why we have to differentiate operating from the mind or operating from the intellect. When you operate from the mind, you always consider what I like and dislike. When you operate from the intellect, you only consider whether it is right or wrong. That's it. We don't look at our likes and dislikes. So a sattvic karta is one, mukta sangha, who is free of attachment, only looks at the action, is it right or is it wrong? And that's why we get so confused. Because the moment we operate from our mind, we always look at likes and dislikes. And then we avoid action that is right, we avoid it because we dislike. And you don't do wrong action, why? Because it brings you pleasure and happiness.
You justify it,
yes, exactly, you justify it. So when we operate from right and wrong, we can never go wrong. you are always on the right track. Never operate from the mind, likes and dislikes. Second quality, anahamvadi. Anahamvadi means free from ego. Sense of ownership is not there. Maintain humility. Humility is very, very important. When there is success, always thank the Lord for it. Many times we forget the Lord also plays His role in our lives. Whatever success, whatever we have attained is by the blessings of the Lord. Dhriti, Utsaha, Samanvita. There's three words there, all in the second line. Dhriti, Utsaha, Samanvita. So, Samanvita means one who is endowed with. Endowed with what? Two qualities. One is called Dhriti. Dhriti means fortitude. What is fortitude? Fortitude means once you know that this is the right path, and to stay on the right path is not very easy because many times there are many obstacles on the right path. You want to do a lot of good, you want to be on the right path, but you find many challenges, many obstacles. Dhriti means having that willpower to keep on the right path. You must not give up. If you are convinced that is the right action, to stay on that path and meet all the challenges and obstacles, that is called a sattvic karta, sattvic doer, who does not give up despite any obstacles at all, dhriti. And utsaha is diligence. Diligence means that attitude that I will put in the full efforts. Utsaha, diligence. Even when there is failure, you pick yourself up again and carry on and keep on putting that effort also. And if you remember beautiful words that Lord Rama spoke, because person understands, despite I am going on the right path, why am I meeting so many obstacles? I am going on the right path, I am doing everything right. I am trying to perfect myself, but why am I facing so many obstacles?
Previous karma.
Previous karma, exactly. Previous karma. So our mistake is what? We equate our action with the reaction. But how do you equate your reaction with present action? Your reaction has got nothing to do with present action. The reaction is the past. But when we say, I am doing so much good, I am going for Gita class, I go to temple 3 times a week, why am I still suffering? The suffering has nothing to do with your present good action. It is a result of the past action.
Even they don't know even about the past action.
Of course, we do not know. That's why. So what we do, we equate our present action and we say, Lord, I am doing so many right things, why are you punishing me? The punishment has got nothing to do with this. So the very famous words that Lord Rama spoke when he was thrown into exile and he saw his father suffering and crying, and he made a remark to his mother. He said, Durlabha hi sada sukham. Durlabha means misfortune. Durlabha means difficult it is to be sada sukham, to be always happy is impossible. At some point of our lives, some negative reaction will come in. So he sees his father crying, mother is trying to console him. He says, Durlabha hi sada sukham. It is difficult, it is impossible to have sada sukham, to be always happy. Right?
Brother,
yes.
Why do they say in Kali Yuga nowadays,
right,
whatever you do, you will leave it now itself, only to
live
for next year.
See, very good question. Very good question. Now, again, who are they telling this to? Who are they giving this warning to? Because if you have knowledge, you know that after Kali Yuga, you will come back again in Satya Yuga, right? So they say what? You do what? Settle all your papam here. What you do here, settle it here, right? Who is this advice for?
The ignorant one.
Better you rectify yourself now. Because as far as the ignorant person, he doesn't know Satya Yuga is coming. Hey, you know this is the last Yuga, this is your last chance, you better rectify yourself. So, okay. That's why different advice is given to different levels of people. So, when we read the Puranas, then people ask, why they say do all these rituals and all. Then you read the Jnana Kanda, they say don't do rituals, then people get confused. Do or don't do? Yes, because it is for different levels of people, different understanding. So the time is up, we will come back next week and finish up this verse number 26. And with the prayer, Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru. I just want to let you know, for the seminar we already have 36 people signed up. Our target is to get 50, so we still need another 14 more. So please keep on spreading the message. Thank you.
Drop to 11.
Huh?
Drop to 11.
Drop to 11?
Yeah.
11 will be available. Please, not signed up.
Yeah.
11 more.
Hello? Yeah. Okay, thank you.